Hello again from the Baltimore Sun. I'm Dan Roderick, Sun columnist, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 290 for Friday, the 18th day of August, 2017. So look, I know there's a lot of excitement about the total eclipse of the sun that is supposed to happen on Monday. I mean, it's scheduled to happen, and I hope it happens because that would mean the scientists were correct. And it's good to have scientists correct about something major like that during this time when we have an anti-science administration in Washington. And also, if the eclipse happens as planned, then that means the natural progress of the Earth is still a thing, and that life has not come to a stunning halt because President Trump said something to set off the missile-happy leader of North Korea. So, I'm looking forward to Monday, even if here in Maryland, we're only going to see about 80% of the solar eclipse. First contact in Western Maryland should be about 1:12 p.m. In Central Maryland, here in the Baltimore region, about 1:18 p.m. And then at 1:22 p.m. in Coastal Maryland at Assateague and Ocean City. Now, if you can't get out of Baltimore for the total eclipse and you want to be in a kind of sciencey educational environment on Monday, if you want to take the children or grandchildren someplace where they'll learn a little astronomy while the eclipse occurs, you could go to the Maryland Science Center. Jim O'Leary, the Science Center's senior scientist, say that four times fast. The Science Center's senior scientist joins us today for a quick primer on the eclipse and what the Science Center will be offering. First, though, Paula Gallagher's weekly book recommendation, this one, A Culinary Journey from Africa to the American South, from Slavery to Freedom.
This book is called The Cooking Gene, and the subtitle is A Journey Through African-American Culinary History in the Old South. The author is Michael W. Twitty. And Michael Twitty is a culinary historian who hails from Rockville. And he's been writing for quite a while now a food blog called Afroculinaria. This book is a result of his writings for Afroculinaria. And he is really interested in his background, where he comes from, but going back generations. He says that his authenticity is based on the foundation of Southern cuisine that came from the slave quarters. Mr. Twitty is very interesting. He teaches Judaic studies in the D.C. area. So he is African-American and Jewish and gay. And so this book is really all through his lens as a serious historian. But it's a really enjoyable, fun book to read. You're getting your history, you know, from somebody who it's like taking a journey with a friend, really. And he talks about how we all come, you know, to represent ourselves in the way that we eat. And the way that we eat is both economic and political. We really represent ourselves in that way that we eat. And his goal is to honor the food past and provide for the food future. He talks about something that he refers to as culinary justice. He's taking a look at the foods in the Deep South and where these food traditions came from. And he wants to promote African-American foodways. And I think he does a great job with this book. He makes the history very interesting. He lends authenticity and experience. He himself being a cook, someone who just gets into the kitchen. He's done a lot of interviews and gets a lot of personal stories from people. And again, he's espousing identity cooking. The idea that our complex identities are reflected in how we eat. He's very knowledgeable. He's eloquent, very passionate about his subject matter. He includes elements of his own family history. In some ways, you're reading a bit of a memoir as you're reading about the food. It's a book that's going to make you hungry. It's a book that's going to make you want to visit New Orleans because he talks about how so much of New Orleans cuisine is really rooted in that Old South and slave traditions. You know, it's just a great book for anyone interested in food or history. Again, the title is The Cooking Gene by Michael W. Twitty.
Paula Gallagher is a librarian in the Baltimore County system who joins us just about every week with a book recommendation. Next up, a primer on the solar eclipse with Jim O'Leary of the Maryland Science Center.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent, locally owned bookseller. The shop offers the best in literature, current affairs, history, poetry, and, of course, books about Baltimore. The Ivy is located at Falls Road at Lake Avenue in Mount Washington. Check us out at theivybookshop.com. The right book is waiting.
The first total solar eclipse to cross the United States since 1918 happens on Monday. You know, assuming nothing bad like intercontinental nuclear war happens over the weekend. Jim O'Leary has for a long time been a senior scientist at the Maryland Science Center, and he tells us what the center has planned for visitors Monday afternoon here in 80% Baltimore. So, Jim, is it possible that I remember an eclipse, a total eclipse from when I was a kid? I remember being in my backyard in Massachusetts.
Yes, right, yeah.
Was there a total eclipse?
There was a total eclipse, but for our part of the world, because I'm a Massachusetts boy too, it was a partial eclipse, and I remember it in 62 or 63 perhaps, and I did the old smoked glass thing, which you don't recommend anymore for people to watch eclipses, but that was my first experience of seeing any kind of eclipse.
Okay. It is memorable.
It is.
Because it's the middle of the day, and it's got dark, and not the way it gets dark during a thunderstorm or something. A different kind of dark.
It's different. And then if you see a total eclipse, I've seen two of those now.
Have you
both
really?
In Canada, and they were astounding.
Can you describe it for me?
Sure. So, I mean, you know what's going to happen. It's timed down to the minute, the second, the fraction of a second even. But so intellectually, get this all prepared. But you've got the sun being slowly blotted out by the moon, and then for as precious like two and a half minutes, the sun is completely gone. And when the sun is covered up, the corona of the sun appears, this wide atmosphere of the sun that stretches out many times the diameter of the sun. And it's got all these beautiful tendrils in it. It's just an astounding, beautiful image. Stars and planets come out because it gets a little bit dark, sort of dark twilight, like half hour after sunset twilight.
So you're seeing Venus, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, and this year, for people in the path, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Mercury are all in the sky. So you can see four planets for a couple of minutes in the total areas.
And how much time will you have to, for those who are in a position to see it this year, how much time will they have to observe all that?
For that total area, totality we call it, that's 2 minutes at max, 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And that's people will travel around the world to see these things, and they last a few minutes. But it's a spectacular experience. It's more of a, again, you know what's going to happen, but the feel of the atmosphere, the chill that comes over the air, the darkness of the sky, and this black hole in the sky where the moon has covered the sun, it's very much an emotional experience. It really is all-encompassing.
Jim, what's my memory of two pieces of cardboard with a pinhole? What is that?
Yeah, that's...
I can't remember anything anymore.
That's a pinhole projector. So two pieces of cardboard, one held high, maybe up by your head, and one held at arm's length. And the one up high has a little pinhole pricked in it. And that acts as a very simple projector. It kind of focuses the image of the sun down onto the other card. And it's small. So if you did it today, you'd see a small circle on that card. But during the eclipse, you'd see more and more of the sun being taken away by the moon. So eventually you'd see a sort of like a crescent-shaped sun. And that's a safe way to watch it on Monday. That's a good way to do it.
This is probably the safest way I ever heard of.
Very easy. Because the sun...
You're not really looking at
it. Right. Sun's at your back, and you've got these things in front of you. So there's lots of tricky ways like that you can do it.
Stephen Colbert had a pair of 3D glasses on his late show telling people this is what you ought to wear for the eclipse.
3D.
Yeah, it got all over social media. People were criticizing him for, don't please joke about this because that's not going to work for you.
It's not. No, you got to have these. One way to do it to look directly is to have these really dark eclipse glasses, and they block out 99.999% of sunlight. So very, very little gets through. That's a safe way to do it. And that way you'll see just the disk of the sun with no glare. And then you'll see the moon taking a little bite out of the sun and getting bigger and bigger.
Okay. So, and those are easily available, that type of glass? Or?
These days, they're getting hard to find. They've made millions of them. Yeah, they are. Actually, the best place that I've sent people to, because there have been some illegitimate companies that are making ones that aren't safe, the American Astronomical Society, AAS.org, has a page on their website that lists, I think, about a dozen companies that they've tested the glasses, and they're legit. So if you go to any one of those companies, and you'd have to do it soon because it's almost eclipse day. And some are sold out already.
And you will need those even in 80% Maryland.
Indeed.
I call it 80% Maryland because apparently that's what we're going to get here.
80%
right?
of the sun covered, yeah. So whenever any slice of the sun is uncovered, even 1%, it's not safe to look by eye. So you want to make sure that you've got those glasses on all the time, unless you're using some way to project it, you know, on your hand or on the ground or something.
How often does this happen?
Around the world, on average, you get a total eclipse of the sun every 18 months or so. So you might have one or two a year at most, but they're over very narrow bands where you have the total eclipse. This year, that path is 60 to 70 miles wide. So you have to be right there to see the total eclipse.
So is that you consider that narrow or...
That's pretty narrow.
That's pretty narrow, 60 to 70 miles all across the country, starting up in the northwest and ending up somewhere, looked to me like down in the Carolinas.
Carolina.
People get a good view of it, right?
Off the coast, just north of Charleston, South Carolina.
What's been going on at the Science Center in preparation for this? You have a lot of inquiries about it?
We have. We've been having a series of eclipse preview days on the 21st of the last 3 months, getting people ready for it, showing how we'll observe it, passing out eclipse glasses, which we're still doing through this weekend. So people visit and go to the planetarium. We give out one pair per family because they're becoming very precious. And then the day of, we'll have lots of ways to observe it. We'll have glasses. We'll have the big telescope that has a solar filter on it. That does the same thing as the glasses, blocks out the sunlight, so you can get a view of the really large sun through the telescope.
Are you able to project that for people to
see
on a monitor?
We'll project that as well, And we can also project it on, we're projecting one just with a mirror onto a sheet, so it'll be about the size of like a dinner plate, something like that. And then we have these little devices that are tabletop, triangular, mini telescopes, we call them sunspotters, and they project an image of the sun right down onto the surface, so you can actually look at this projected image. That's about the size of a coffee cup, around about that size. So
that
there's lots of different
ways
to do it.
So if you want to take advantage of those things on Monday, August 21st, what time do you need to be at the Science Center?
Well, we're doing that from noon to 4. We're expecting a big crowd, so we're doing kind of half-hour entries into the observation area, which is up on the roof, because the roof is kind of limited space. The observatory is there, but there's a lot of other things around as well. So we have one roof area that overlooks the harbor. Beautiful view of the harbor, by the way, but we'll have activities scattered around there, portable telescopes set up, so people can come visit the Science Center and at any time. But admission to the observing area for the eclipse is by the half hour, because we just have to be able to control the size of the crowd on the roof.
So that 80%, that total, in quotes, 80% for us would occur around what time?
2:43.
Okay.
So the whole thing starts at 1:18, so it's very slow progress, 1:18 to 2:43. Then you get that little sliver of the sun left. And then from 2:43 to 4:01, the moon moves off the sun. So a long period, 1:18 to 4:01.
Do you have any advice for photography?
Yeah, some people have asked about using just their cell phone, but because, again, there's so much sunlight, even in that 20%, you won't really catch much of anything. So you need to have a properly filtered camera, and the sun is really very small in the sky. You think of it very glary, it takes up a lot of space, but you can put once you had your eclipse glasses on, you could put your little finger up and cover up the disk of the sun. It's that small. So you'd really need a good size lens to be able to get any kind of detail of that. So you need some long lenses with a proper solar filter, which they sell for cameras and telescopes as well.
Now, in this 80% territory here in Maryland, will we see any of the planets clearly?
No, it won't get dark.
Get dark enough for that.
No. What you might notice as you get near that 80% time, the temperature might change a little bit. The color of the sky might change slightly. But I've been telling people, if you didn't know an eclipse was happening and you weren't preparing for it, it could come and go and you wouldn't even notice it in this 80% era.
Oh.
Very different if you're...
That's a little disappointing.
Yeah. Well, there's another one coming
up. Is it going to look like a cloudy day? Is that how it would look to you, or would you not?
No, not really.
No?
Yeah, it's just going to be... The flavor of the light, the color of the light might be slightly different. And that's really about it. And again, the temperature might change slightly if it's going to be hot 80-something day, you might notice a change in the temperature, maybe a change in the wind a little bit.
So someone is getting into this at the last minute, and they just heard what you said. They say, well, geez, I better drive down to Virginia someplace, or what?
One of the concerns, I've read a few things by traffic engineers, and they're really concerned about the traffic on the road, because the estimate is something like 100 million people live within 2 hours of the central path. And there could be people that the last weekend or the last day do just what you're saying and say, hey, we should check this out. And boy, it could be like somebody suggested, like 20 Woodstock festivals happening at the same time along this path of totality.
Well, what if we stay home or at the Science Center? I don't know if you were planning on doing this, but somebody must be feeding in the total eclipse from someplace.
Indeed.
Right?
Yeah, a number of places are. NASA is, of course, the Exploratorium Museum in California. They're going to have several places along. The question is just getting bandwidth, because they're going to be very, very busy. But there are, at least I've seen, 6 or 8 different places that are doing it, including one of the networks, ABC, said they're having a 2-hour special. So
okay.
That'll be...
Well, the scene at the Science Center still sounds good because you'd be among other people, and it's an interesting experience to share with
others. A shared event, yeah. And we'll have staff that know what's going on and can explain it and answer questions, things like that. So.
I'm trying to think of the old days. If we were told that people thought the world was coming to an end.
Indeed. You had this, here's the life-giving sun disappearing from the sky.
In the middle of the day.
Right. So is it coming back? Will it ever return? So
it must have been a nerve-wracking 2 minutes.
Indeed. And the legends would indicate that most cultures would make noise. They'd bang drums and bang things together and shout and sing and try to scare whatever monster was gobbling up the sun, scare them away from the sun. And, you know, it always worked. So they did that over and over
again.
We're
still here.
We're still here, right?
Well, Jim, thank you very much. It's very informative. Was there anything else you wanted to mention to folks?
So there's another eclipse coming up. If you've missed this one, another one that crosses the United States. Now, we've waited 38 years for one to be on the United States anywhere. So 6.5 years, another one comes. April 8th, 2024.
This is a total.
Total eclipse. And the path takes it from Texas up through the center of the country, over the Great Lakes, northern New England, and out to the Maritimes. And the neat thing about it is that there will be a total eclipse over Niagara Falls on that day.
Wow. Pretty again, neat. The date, Jim?
April 8th, 2024.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
We might make that.
I think we can make it, yeah. I'll
We're
try.
Not that old. All right, Jim, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Jim O'Leary is the Maryland Science Center's senior scientist. For more information about what's happening there on Monday, you can go down and visit with Jim and the others who work at the Science Center. Go to their website, www.mdsci.org. Also, The Sun has plenty of information about the eclipse online as well. That's our show for now. We welcome comments about it on Facebook or Twitter. Send me an email, drodricks@baltsun.com. For producer Steve Early in the Baltimore Sun Newsroom, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and have a great weekend.